comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to
From
the Kevin Smith Show.
Sea throughout the solar system,
well,
and extending to interstellar regions.
You gotta expect when you move stuff, things change. Sorry about that. Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet. Thank you for being here. Welcome to Talk Radio like nowhere else on Earth. And it is the show where you matter. I hope you've had a wonderful day today. And we're going to do everything we can to make it even better as we head off into the nighttime together here aboard the KSS Starship. K-Files, well, as I have been telling you all week, the K-Files was blocked. We have five different ways to send it out, or we did have. And it got all of them got blocked last week, and I couldn't send it out. So I posted it online. I found a way around it, and our subscribers to the K-Files have received today a special edition of the K-Files with information about us finding a way around the blockage. So it will be distributed, and you need to be subscribed. It's our free newsletter, and you know, it's got all kinds of good information in it, links to interesting articles, links to interesting videos, the inside scoop on what's going on here at the show, and as a result of not subscribing to the K-Files, you are in the dark, and that's why. We're still getting emails from people about what happened to the Listen to Latest show, because that's been in the K-Files, as well as it has been announced here on the show. We still have Listen to Latest show, but we did what we said we were going to do on the first day that we offered Listen to Latest show, which that happened on March the 8th, 2008. And we've made that announcement many, many times since, and that is that it actually is a feature that belongs in the members area. We were going to offer it for free for as long as we could, but when it became impossible for us to continue giving it away for free, we would move it to the members area. And that's what we did. We gave it away for free for 18 months. And now, if you want the convenience of listening to Latest Show, it's still there, and it costs the whopping princely sum of 23 cents a day. Of course, for that 23 cents a day, you also get to watch the shows, you get to watch the Latest Show, you get to listen to the Latest Show, you get our archives, the K-Pods, you get chat, you get forums, you get our library of free ebooks. You get our video galaxy. You get your own profile page, your friends page, your own blog, private messaging. You get all kinds of stuff for 23 cents. I know, it is an immense sum. I know that it is absolutely a sign of abject, capitalistic pig greed. You need to join. It's 23 cents a day. We'll be back right after this. Thank you. My guest this evening is someone very familiar to everyone in the Kevin Smith Show audience. His name is Marshall Masters. He is television producer. He is an author. He is a publisher. And he's an all-around great guy. Marshall, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
A pleasure to be back, Kevin. I always love being on your show, especially you got the greatest audience out there. I hope you do an open mic, because I always love talking to them.
We will. In the second hour, we'll open up the telephone so that they can join us and ask you questions and put you in the hot seat.
I love it.
All right. Marshall, a couple of things. I want to get to the new video you've got out. I watched it. It's great. There's a link to it on my website, and it really is great. Before we do that, let's talk for a little bit. You and I had talked on the phone, and you shared some information with me that I really was not all that aware of. But people like you and me putting out what mainstream would consider to be alternative information have really come under attack, and it has intensified within the past few months. And I was sharing with you what happened to us here at the Kevin Smith Show this past weekend. And you were talking about other people that have come under attack as well. I think you said there were thousands of web pages that have been taken down. Let's talk about that a little bit. What's going on with this?
Well, the Obama administration recently took down a whole... They took down six sites, but these sites had a lot of blogger pages. And so there were just thousands of people that had blogs, and they took them down ostensibly because there was like video issues where they were passing video and nobody wanted that to happen. But you know, the way the whole thing went down was real cheesy, very little explanations. And the reason why that troubles me is they already have that power.
Mm-hmm.
They're already using that power now. You know, there's a new bill going before the Senate to give the president even more control over that. And my concern is that we're going to wind up with a Chinese-style intranet. And the internet is going to, you know, evaporate, and it's going to be as tightly controlled as it is in China. And so there are things that are coming on that are putting the screws to things, and that's the reason why now what I say to folks is there's no such a thing as a sheeple. You know, it's for years always been a common term people would use to disparage folks that, you know, look at this and then just blow it off and move on down the road, and don't, you know, or worse yet, mock and ridicule others. And I see a lot of that. I'm not going to behave. There's no excuse for that kind of behavior, and I'm not about to try. But on the other hand, when you use the term a sheeple,
mm-hmm.
there's a basic presumption that that person has access to the information they need to make an informed decision. And that is not the case. The screws are cranking down. And in places and in ways that are not obvious. Now, to give you an example, we brought out our book Planet X Forecast and 2012 Survival Guide. And we licensed it to other publishers in Japan, Germany, and Italy. I always find it interesting that it was the former Axis states that took interest. But in Italy, we had licensed an academic press called Academia. And, you know, they're like academic presses here. And the publisher, Silvestri, put the book out, and it really was doing well, particularly after there was the very first conference on Planet X in 2009 in Rome. Well, and we attended that. Jacko van der Warp was there. But after that, things started cranking down. Now, our book, as well as other books in Italian language, were doing so well in the bookstores that we were on the end caps, okay? And you write books, too. You know what that means if you got a book that's making it to the end caps or one of the islands or next to the registers. That is primo location.
Yes.
And you only get there if you're moving volume.
Mm-hmm.
So he was really excited. Things were really going well for him and others. The Italian people were really taking to the topic. And I will tell you, you know, like in Japan, that's just one country, all right? Well, Japan alone, we sold probably close to 5,000 copies of Planet X, the Japanese translation, and in a small market like that. So, I mean, outside of the U.S., we think that we're really on top of this, but other people in other countries, and it's spotty, it depends. You know, like in France, they just don't even know about it and don't care. But in Italy, people were really gravitating it. Well, all of a sudden, our book, along with other books on the topic, started coming out of the bookstores, period.
You mean they took them off the shelves?
Yeah. Yeah, they were taking successful selling books off the shelves. And then what happened was that afterwards, a whole new bevy of Planet X in 2012 experts emerged in Italy. And they have something that genuine researchers like us do not have. They have unfettered access to the media. So, and they're spinning everything 180 degrees in the other direction. So consequently, we got shut down. Now, I know what happened, and this is really Vatican interference here, because we've had three publishers, Spanish language publishers in the Americas, that really took a serious pass at this. So they really went through a serious review, and they all declined, and was always for the same reason. Push came to shove. They were afraid that this would incur the wrath of the church and there would be consequences for them, which is exactly what happened in Italy. So, you know, there's manipulation and control, and that's that. So it's happening out there. It's cranking it down. But on the other hand, I don't let it get me, because I talk to folks, you know, when we have a toll-free order line, and they call in, and mostly the older people that do that. And they've given me so much hope and joy, because here's people that have actually been following this topic longer than I have, okay? And what are they doing? They're getting things prepared to help others. And so it's not like the guys that call me and say, well, you know, I bought a surplus missile silo over in this general area. You know, is that area okay? And then, you know, that's it. It's them and their own, and they don't want to deal with anyone else. But then I talk to these grandparents, all right? These are people in their 70s, 80s, and even into their 90s, have been following this for decades. One man started following Planet X back in the 1930s when he was a young lad. And what they're doing is they're just focusing on being there for their loved ones and anyone else they can help. And I talk to more of these people all the time. And so as much as we might want to be dismayed with what's happening with all of this control, take heart, all right? Those of you out there that you're feeling like you got to stand alone in your knowing, you're not standing alone. Take heart. That's the real message.
Well, I know that you know that since the new administration came in, I know that the attacks against this show have intensified, and I talk with other talk show hosts, and the same thing has happened to them. And then I've heard some stories of other talk show hosts that I haven't talked to, but through the grapevine, you know how news travels.
Oh, yeah.
But one show, I had the host on as a guest on this show, And he was telling me about an interview that he was trying to do. And he was pre-recording, which, of course, you know, we do it live. So if we get interrupted, people hear it live. But I think he said it was 27 interruptions of the phone line. And they finally, after 27 interruptions, got enough to use for a show. Recently, Jeff Rentz did an interview with Clark McClellan. And Clark doesn't do interviews. As far as I know, it's the only radio interview he's ever done. And they were pre-recording. And Rentz had, I believe it was 12 interruptions, and they finally got enough audio that they could do a 39-minute program, I believe is what it was, with Clark McClellan. So this kind of thing, you know, it's not just me. It does happen here, and people know probably more about it here because I don't pre-record. So when they attack me, the public hears it. When they interrupt the phones, the public knows it. And so it's more obvious here than, you know, shows that pre-record and then edit all that stuff out. But I want the public to hear it. I want the public to be as frustrated with it as I am. I want the public to be as informed and knowledgeable that it is going on as they can be. And the best way is for them to hear it live when it happens. And but it has intensified since January. Now, I cannot... you know, I can suspect, I can speculate, but I can't actually say that there is a link between that and this administration. However, there's a link with the timing. The timing is the same. And, you know, I cannot actually link it to the administration, but I do know that with the beginning of this administration, we began to have more intense attacks. And it has continued, and it will continue. The new bill will give the president the power to shut down the internet entirely for up to 4 months at a time.
Yeah, and that's really troublesome. But when they start to put the screws on it like that, then it creates another series of problems. And so it's always, you know, slap one Band-Aid here and another one peels off somewhere else. But they have the ability to really shut things down. And it's not only shutting down the internet. What you got to remember is that how many cities right now are converting over to these new electronic meters on the sides of houses?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we already have a problem here in California. Where people are really starting to get riled because PG&E can go out and some guy just hits a key on a keyboard and you go dark. And the problem with that, not having someone physically go out to the house and turn off the power, is that that is power, being able to just keyboard someone into darkness, and it will be abused. And what people don't understand is how they get into to do this. And it's my experience before I had my publishing business. I was in the computer industry for over two decades. And I worked with companies like Oracle, Sun Microsystems, Lockheed Martin, AT&T, and so forth. And I worked on data centers. That was a lot of the technology I worked on. And the kinds of hits that I'm seeing are very precise surgical hits. And they're the kind of thing that you can only really do when you're on an inside trusted network. Now, there's a difference between external networks and internal networks. External is, you know, Joe Schmo sitting on his computer in, you know, backhoe wherever. And he's coming in, and he wants to hack into something or deface a website. He's got to beat down the front gates and come in through an external network. And those are the ones that have all the security on them. But internal networks are inside the data centers. And the thing of it is that They're called trusted networks because there is no security on them. It's the way that you manage this. Now, if you can get into a data center, you can manipulate any server in that data center if you can get into what's called the backbone. And that's the main conduit where all the traffic's moving inside the trusted networks inside the network of a data center. Well, all of these data centers already have what's called protocol sniffers or packet sniffers. And what they're the ones that the government uses for ostensibly trying to find Al-Qaeda and these guys. And they're just sniffing everything that's passing through. Well, that has access. Now, is the government going in and making the surgical strikes? No, not really. This is coming from the kinds of people who either manufacture this equipment, so they would have the back doors, or their buddy with somebody who has the back door keys, and they can come in, get into a data center, and very quietly make a surgical hit. Now, they don't have to take down a whole website. Let's say you have a website and you're using a content server like a SQL database. All they got to do is go into your database and just change the login to that database. Now, that's something that nobody would even know where to find it coming in from the outside. But if they go in and do it, then what happens is that your website can't talk to its database anymore because it has an old login, and the new login was invented by somebody else.
Yeah, that happened to us last year.
Dead. That's right, and you're dead in the water. And so you don't know unless you call and a service tech says, oh, gosh, you know, you got the wrong logins. And so they fix it, and you go through the whole thing. These are surgical hits. They'll hit you that way. They'll take down a configuration file. Maybe they're going to go for a specific image file. Maybe they're going to go for something that what they're looking for are critical files that link things together. You know, and websites have a lot of them. And you can think of them like the little linkage in your car between the gas pedal, you know, and the carburetor, or the fuel system, the linkages like, you know, the car between the transmission and the rear end. All you have to do is just take out a little pin here, you know, tweak something there, and the car is useless.
Yeah.
And so that's how they do it.
All right. We have to step away for break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Marshall Masters, and we've been talking about some very, I would say, pernicious attacks against alternative media. These are not recent. These have been going on now for, it's been happening since I started the show, but it's been intense, really intense, for the last 7 months. Marshall, you were talking about how someone could gain access to the back door of these internal networks. Would this be something that would be more likely to be some government agent doing this, or would it be more likely to be someone being paid by competition to frustrate somebody? I mean, which way would you think that goes?
Well, this is not commercial espionage. And if the government's going to hit you, I mean, I look at the nature of the attacks, and you're absolutely right. There's a trend on the severity of these attacks. It's something that I really first started noticing this pattern back in 2006, 2007. But, you know, in the last year, it's really heated up, and it's growing commensurate to the amount of awareness that's happening in the topic. More people are becoming aware. Now, when the government does it, they tend to be clumsy. You know, like, for example, when the movie 2012 came out, and NASA was going on and on about how, direct quote, David Morrison at NASA said, nothing is going to happen in 2012. Well, now they're singing the 2012 solar maximum solar hurricane blues, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They do a total flip-flop. So when governments do this stuff, they do it, and they tend to be more clumsy. If you're going to have hackers there do it, nah, because what they're going to do is they want to come in and make a big splash and, you know, get noticed. The guys that are hitting are, and a lot of this actually is coming out from England. And these are the globalist interests, the elites. And now you can redefine that term however you want. It's the guys that, you know, as the old saying goes, he has the gold, makes the rules. But what they do is they have the ability to sneak in through these other systems that are in place by, you know, I mean, good Lord, you can't count on two hands the number of security agencies anymore in the U.S. And they all have some kind of access. They can piggy in through these systems because they're either, you know, building or funding, or they're doing something, they're involved in some way, they can get in. And when they do something that is very surgical, very precise. When they take you down, when they hit you, they go straight for a kill zone. You know, if you talk to a sniper in the Army, you're going to ask him, where do you want to put your bullet? He's going to say, in the apricot. The apricot is the medulla oblongata at the base of your skull, and it's called a trigger kill because you put a bullet through somebody's medulla oblongata, they're dead before they can even think to pull the trigger. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to go for an apricot shot. They're going to take you down that way. And they're going to do it in a way where there is plausible deniability. They like to cover their tracks.
Well, of course. I mean, you know, they are cowards, or they would be right out in public as champions of their globalist monarchy. Well, it's not even a monarchy, a totalitarian globalist government that they want. And, you know, they don't get out in public with that because they don't have the courage of their convictions. They know they're wrong. They know the world hates them, and they know the world hates what they propose. And when they have their meetings, when they do their thing, they do it in secret. They do it in darkness, and you expect that of cowards. They are cowards. And
they do that. But on the other, there's another reason though that they do that.
Mm-hmm.
See, part of their control mechanism is that people talk about them doing these very kinds of things. You know, think back to when you were a kid in grammar school and there was a bully. What gave that bully power? Everybody was talking about how mean and how you could get really hurt if you messed with that bully, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so talking the talk about the bully gave the bully more power than the bully has. You know, and then finally one kid just says, "Ah, to heck with it," you know, punches him in the nose, and the bully folds up like a, you know, a house of cards.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's going, gee, you know, I didn't see that coming. And same thing here, all right? And so what these are just, they're whipping it up. They whip up these fears. They whip up these concerns. The whole point of it is to make you angry, which eventually leads you to a state of impotence because you don't know how to get at these guys, and you can't, you know, get everybody together to agree on anything.
And, mm-hmm.
and the reason why nobody can agree on anything, the reason why there's no consensus that can form, is that they manipulate things. What's really happening here, okay, is that the species is coming up to an evolutionary stage. And if we are able to, and we've been here many times before, and I believe this is probably our last time to get it right, and after that, the universe is going to cut its losses, and that's it. Start over with somebody else. But all they have to do to win all right, is just keep us confused enough that we cannot reach critical mass. That's all they have to do. Not defeat everybody, not shut it all down, just prevent critical mass from occurring.
Yeah, but I don't think they're succeeding this time.
I don't think they're succeeding either. But, you know, on the same hand, okay, let's not pat ourselves on the back and go, ha-ha, we're going to win anyway, because it's still a crapshoot.
Yeah.
All right? And what it's really going to be is how people approach this. And, you know, the interesting thing, we were doing a lot of channeling research for almost, it was well over 18 months. And we worked with numerous channels, you know, in many different places, U.S., Canada, and elsewhere. And we worked with many different entities. And so we had a protocol, you know, no one voice is omnipotent. We favor trends over specifics. And third was that we would use cross-referenced questions to make sure that we could mitigate the channel filtering, because channels are really afraid of being rejected or abused because they're just relaying a message that nobody wants to hear. But one of those sessions, this was after I started really getting lambasted with attack campaigns on me. I mean, it was like nothing I had ever seen before. And, I mean, the smear just was sickening. So I was talking, this one gal was probably one of our better channels, and she, you know, what she does is, you know, she just works with numerous different guides, and the one that came in, and you can actually find them on Wikipedia, that surprised me, was Serapis Bey, and from ancient Egypt. And his thing, his mission, is really just to help people deal with this very thing. And here's how Serapis Bey explained it to me, and it has always given me a great deal of comfort. He said, "Marshall, the history of the human species is like a grand book of many, many chapters. And the chapter that you're in now belongs to them. Period. There's nothing you can do to change that. It is theirs. They own it. They control it, and there's nothing to be done for it. But, as with all chapters in all books, it comes to a close, and the next chapter begins. And what they know is the next chapter is not theirs. And everything that they're doing right now is to leapfrog their power, leapfrog their control, into that next chapter of human evolution so that they can continue controlling. And so if we, you know, allow them to do that by letting them put us into a state of fear, you know, they could very well prevail. But if we just remain steadfast, and this is, you know, I came at this topic, you know, as born hard geek, left brainer, all right? I was in the computer business when I started all this. But I've really, you know, come to the right side of my brain quite a bit. And you have to have a view that is both spiritual and scientific at the same time. One cannot favor the other. Scientists will sit there and deny something. If they can't stick a test probe up the kazoo, it doesn't exist. But on the other hand, spiritualists send out a message that they say, well, in 2012, one day, you know, God's going to flip a switch and we're all going to get up and sing and want to buy the world a Coke. You know, both viewpoints are polarized. Both remind me of just one-eyed binocular salesmen. But you put the two of them together, things make a lot more sense. And that's where I go with this. And so for the folks out there that are really feeling frustrated and that you're feeling in a, you feel the worst of all is that you feel impotent. You just feel like these bastards can do it and they're indifferent and they're getting away with it. No. If you let them make you feel that way, then they are winning. But if you just can stand your ground and, you know, come at this with a loving view, like these little grandmothers and grandfathers I was telling you about that want to get things together as much as they can for their kids, grandkids, and other people and strangers as well, to help those that they can as a gesture of love. This is a power that the elites cannot defeat. They know that. And they
well, and plus, you know, what you're describing is something, you're describing something I say very often, and that is powerful people are only as powerful as the rest of us let them be.
Correct. Absolutely correct. And so, you know, that's the reason why talking about them, I think ignoring them is foolish as well. Let's be practical. Let's be rational. You have to understand them. You know, the best way to frame it is that there's an old saying in Texas I love. You can play with snakes as long as you want, providing you remember to hold them by the head.
Right? There's a lot of wisdom in that.
There sure is. And that's the case here. And so if you're looking at this and you understand that this is not the exercise of power, these people can't get anything right. Okay? You look at all of their pseudo mechanisms for bleeding the world, and they can have their, you know, little kingdoms, and no, it's not all working. But if we are just as average folks, and whether you lose your internet connection, you lose your internet connection, and all of this happens and you feel like you're alone, no, you're not alone. And what you do is you just don't, well, there's another great saying I like, illegitimae non carborundum, which is Latin for don't let the bastards grind you down. And that's what we do here. Illegitimae non carborundum.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Marshall Masters. Marshall, a lot of what we've been talking about really feeds into, or I guess flows from, what you talk about in your latest video about the five stages of catastrophism. We've got a few minutes before we go to the top of the hour break. Kind of introduce us to that a little bit.
Well, it's the process by which everybody comes to it. You know, I'm sure that you probably came to this topic much the same way I did, and frankly, much the same way most of your listeners out there did. You know, we all walked straight backwards into it, didn't we?
Well, I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. the feeling. You just like, hold on a second, you know, what am I doing here? Did I take a left somewhere? Yeah, you know, and so you come into this, and that's the role of awareness. Well, awareness just, we see something, and all of a sudden it flags in our mind. We go, okay, what am I going to do about this? And now, five stages of catastrophism. The first one is, I don't have time for this crap. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I use the word crap, and it's like some people ask me why, and I say, well, because when I wrote this for Planet X Forecast and 2012 Survival Guide. And I did that, and then afterwards I thought, well, maybe I should use a more refined word. Everybody said, no, that really sizes it up pretty good. Use that word. You know, so all my reviews were telling me, stick with it. Now, in the first stage of catastrophism, what I explained in the video, it's real simple. You have a choice. You know, you're going to look at this, and something gets your attention. It's odd. It's out of the usual. Makes you wonder. And you look at that, and people are going to realize, okay, this is a pretty deep hole. Do I want to climb down into this hole? You know that. Intuitively, you know that. And what happens is about 99.9% of the folks will go, I don't have time for this crap, because they don't want to go there. Okay? They just want to hit the snooze alarm and figure that, well, let it pass. When I wake up, it's business as usual. But then there's people that look at that and they ask the one question that starts them down the path into awareness. They go, what am I looking at? Okay? What am I looking at? And that's when you take responsibility for your own awareness, your own perception. And then you start looking at it, and it takes you into second stage. And that's the point where you look at it, and then the second stage, one of the things is you kind of get middle of it, and you go, am I nuts? Am I crazy? Am I just inventing all this in my head? I was there. I'm sure you were, too. It's the rational thing. It's what Western thinkers do. And then at a certain point, you say to yourself, no, I'm not nuts. I'm seeing something. And the next thing that happens after that is you have your oh crap moment, which is what I call stage two. That's when you're looking at the ceiling at night in your bedroom and, you know, you're memorizing every dimple and little micro crack or whatever. And all those scenarios are flooding through your mind and it's nightmarish. And then the next step after that, and here's where people really tend to hurt themselves, is stage three. It's the worst of the five stages, and it's called share the crap. Because what they do is they go out and they, you know, now, okay, I know enough here to sound the alarm. We need to look at this. Other people I love and care about need to look at this, be aware of it at least. And they go and they share the crap. And what they forget is everyone they're sharing with is in still what? Stage one, okay.
Or maybe not even to stage one yet. Maybe they haven't even noticed anything yet.
Bingo. And so then what happens is next comes the usual stuff that people do when they don't want to hear someone or what they have to say. They mock and ridicule them, humiliate them, because humiliation is much easier than logic to silence an argument. And that's what happens. And so these people then feel ostracized in their own personal network of family and friends. And it's a terrible, lonely place to be because, you know you're at a point where there's no going back. The blinders are off your head. You can, you can booze your way out of it. You can pray your way out of it. You can pill your way out of it. You can smoke your way out of it, and you ain't going to get nowhere. You're just going to loop back because once the blinders are off, the blinders stay off. So at that point, you move into stage four. Crap happens. It's resignation. You understand you're going to have to stand alone in your knowing. And this is actually when it gets better for people because at that point, you've cycled through the really bad emotional states and now you're into deep study. And this is where you're getting a sense of mastery in the topic. It gives you confidence in your own perceptions, but also the knowledge brings you a sense of comfort. And also, you feel a sense of control returning to your life. Doesn't mean that, you know, you're going to significantly enhance your odds of survival, although you will substantially do that eventually. But this is a point where you're really taking control. And then we come to the fifth stage. And the fifth stage is what I call the universe is unfolding as it should. And that when you get into stage five, what you realize is all the first four stages, the crap was about only one thing. Fear. Fear is the knife's edge of death. You follow your fears, you will inevitably stumble upon a blade. And that's what you come to realize. Fear is the killer. And you get beyond the fear. Now, that doesn't mean you're Pollyannish, la, 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 okay, woo, 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 I'm going to buy the world a Coke, and you're singing a song. No. It means you've got a clear focus on things. You know, in the military, it's calm under fire. There are people that do heroic things because when the bullets are flying everywhere and people are just coming unglued and they can't deal with things, these guys can keep their heads about them like an Audie Murphy from World War II. Kept his head about him. Guy stood on a burning tank with a 50 cal, mowed down an entire company of German infantry, okay? Because the guy could keep his head under fire. He stayed frosty. And that's what stage five really gives you. And that's when you really start making a difference. And so the reason why I did this video is that I've been studying the five stages of catastrophism that I've developed for years, all right? And really, I can go back 10 years to when I started my site. Well, what I know about everybody out there today that's listening to this program, folks, you don't have 10 years, okay? And so what I wanted to do is just take it and boil it down into bite-sized chunks so that you could process yourself through these five stages, not in 10 years, but in 10 weeks or less. And that's really what I want to do to help people with that video. That's the reason why I put it out there. And so, I talk about my books, and I have a business, all right, and it supports my research. But in that video is everything you will need to understand the five stages of catastrophism to put it to work for you. And once you get to that point where you understand that fear is the knife's edge of death, and you've faced that monster, and you can smell that sulfur breath, but you stand in your ground, okay, you're in a good place, because now you're not going to be rattled while everyone else is freaking out. You're not going to be rattled. You're going to have a real clear bead on where you're going and what you're doing, and you're going to get there 10 times easier than everybody else that's going, oh my God, the elites are doing this and that and whatever, and now the destruction, they're doing that, and you're just sitting and saying to the wife and the kids, okay, plan B, we're going to zone 2, pack up the car, we're out of here. And that's it.
Yeah, and let me say this before the break takes over. I think we've got enough time, but let me say this. Folks, if you want to see this video, go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, and right under Marshall's picture, there's a link to this video. All right? Now, if you click on his picture, it will take you over to his website. But if you look right under his picture, there's a link to his video that we're talking about, and it's well worth watching. And very well produced and interesting, and it's got a lot of good information in it. So I recommend that you do it, and that's why I put the link on the website. Marshall, we are coming up on the top of the hour break here in a little bit less than a minute. When we come back, I'm going to open up the telephone lines and allow people to give you a call and ask their questions, make their comments. And, we realize that our audience is not monolithic. There are people who are in agreement with what you say. There are people who are not. But that's okay, because we're all in agreement with free thinking and freedom of speech. And we want you to call as soon as we come back from this break. We'll return. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Marshall Masters. And we're going to open up the telephone lines. I know there are a lot of folks that would love to call in and speak with Marshall. And you've got a question or a comment, we want you to be able to join the conversation. The telephone number here in the studio is 623-444-5889. We do have a toll-free number. If you can call that main number without it costing you long distance, please use that number. But if it's going to cost you long distance to call us, use our toll-free number, 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA and outside of Canada, we don't have a toll-free number for out there, but we do have the flash message option just for you. So you go to my website, you can call us on the main number, or you can go to my website, scroll down, and you'll see a link that says Flash Message. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry.
Hi. Hi, Marshall.
Hi, Terry.
How are you doing?
All right.
Yeah, what you were saying there as far as them steps, I mean, you know, that's right on. You know, I experienced every one of them and still are, you know, when I try and kill people stuff. And yet, you know, my wife and everything, you know, it's, you know, well, let's just live for today, you know. Well, you're living enough for today for both of us, so, you know, give me my space. And, because I put, her complaint is because I put a lot of our capital into precious metal because I don't trust, you know, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and the dollar's going to be worth anything. So, with that said, most of the people, you know, are in denial, and that's just not a river in Egypt. You know, out of frustration, I can't see us going down, you know, without a fight. You know, people talk about, you know, no civil war and all that stuff, but in reality, they've already drawn first blood in many of people who Paul Revere's were out there, you know, like you, you know, saying and telling the truth, have already died. You know, I just, you know, I'm not going to go to a camp, you know, without a fight, you know. So I just wonder what your opinion is on that, you know, when the stuff gets down. Because if they're getting really scared, you know, they're going to do something stupid, you know. You know, and it's going to be go time, you know, and I just wonder if you agree, and I'll listen off air. Thanks.
Well, Terry, I agree with, you know, your concerns, and let me share a different perspective on it. And if you know that there's a wounded bear in the cave, all right, and it's a dying bear, but it still can rip your guts out with one swipe, are you going to go spelunking in the cave, all right? No, you know, you wait until there's an odor in the cave, and then you go spelunking. You know the bear is dead. The point here is that you stay, you know, with it. You're mindful of it. You know where these concerns are, but what you want to be is someplace else. And that's really, I mean, in preparing for everybody else, one of the things I say in the video is please do not evangelize this information. Because what you can actually do is reduce somebody's chances of surviving by evangelizing it, and here's why. You have to come to it naturally. You found it naturally, I did, Kevin did, everyone else does, and there's a process. But when you're in the middle of waving your arms and screaming, I don't want to hear it, you know, well, that could cause you to delay or miss that opportunity. That's something that is significant to you that would bring you into awareness. What you really want to do is let your friends and family know, just subtly, you know, that's what you're interested in, but don't push it on them. And what you do is in the background, you do what you can. And you do preparations, you get things ready to go, and so that when stuff pops, you can help them. And you know, at that point, it's not about, well, ha-ha, I was right, ha-ha, you were wrong, good Lord, you don't want to do that, you know? I mean, I've been married long enough to learn that. But, you know, it's important that you are waiting for them to come to awareness. Everyone's going to come into awareness one way or another. You see, what you have to understand, Terry, is what the elites really want is for people to come into awareness right about the time they're dying. This is about a massive eugenics effort to reduce the population of the planet. We're consuming the planet. We're totally non-sustainable here, all right? They want to get it down to manageable numbers, and the easiest way to do that is let a cataclysm like this happen, and then you just say, well, look up in the sky. It's that big rock doing it to you. Not us, not the guys who've been withholding this information for decades. It's the rock up in the sky that's doing it to you. But I think a good way to look at this, to understand where the elites are coming from and how they operate, is that you go out and you get that movie 2012. You can get it on Netflix now and rent it. And you watch it a couple of times. You know, get past the Hollywood science and the eye candy. All of that is made to disassociate you from the real threat at hand so that you can just enjoy the movie. What you want to go for is the subtext. What are the elites doing? How are they manipulating the scene? How are they manipulating other people? And I will tell you that Emmerich, who produced this, this is not the nonsense part of the film. The rest of it, to me, was all, you know, here or there. But this part of the film, the subtext, where he's really showing you the elites, how they think, how they operate, and how they achieve these results, this is exactly what the hell is happening. That is exactly what's happening. And so do you want to be, you know, do you want to be standing there looking at a tsunami wave coming at you and going, dang, I didn't see this coming? Well, if you were there, that's what they wanted. But you've got to be strong for your family. You've got to be able to go out there and, you know, look for these advanced dangers and quietly prepare, and you do what you can. And yeah, the wives will get sometimes really freaked out and nervous about it because it's a topic they sure don't want to talk about. But on the other hand, what if you go out and you just get a couple of months worth of pinto beans and peanut butter? Might sound stupid, but you can live on pinto beans and peanut butter.
Right. Marshall, we need to move on to the next call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Perry from San Luis Obispo, California.
Hi, Perry.
I hope I'm getting through because as I was on hold, it's sounding like the phones are getting all messed up.
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Marshall. Oh, okay, great. Okay. Hey, Marshall, I have an idea. And I'm kind of curious of what your feedback would be on this. I know that you've done a lot of thought about intention, that's a...
Well, we lost Perry. I don't know. Perry, if you will call back in, give it a couple of minutes. Perry apparently was hearing something that I was not hearing on the line. I could hear him okay, couldn't you, Marshall?
He was starting to break up towards the end, so, but we've been here before, haven't we, good buddy?
Well, we have. The interesting thing, what happened there is his line began to reboot while he was talking with us, and then he went away, but it's trying to reboot now. Yeah, we've been here before, and I suspect we will always be here.
Yeah.
So, Perry, if you will call back in, and as a matter of fact, let's see here. No, that's not going to be it.
Yeah.
Okay. If you call back in, Perry, we'll put you back on the air. The telephone number is 623-444-5889 or toll-free at 888-223-4599. And, you know, Marshall, I think there's real value in what you were saying about don't evangelize on this. People who think there is a problem and they start looking for a solution are going to find it. People who think there is no problem would not recognize a solution nor accept one if it hits them in the face. If it runs them down in the street, they're not going to recognize it as a solution because they have not yet recognized that there's a problem.
Precisely.
So those that want it will get it, and those that don't won't. And the fact is, there's no way to help someone who doesn't know or will not admit they need help. Perry is back on the line. Perry, can you hear us better now?
It's still really spotty. I think they're attacking me this time, Kevin.
Could be.
Because of my last few calls. Okay, I think that from the chat people are saying that I got to the intention and then it stopped. So what I wanted to ask, Marshall, is what do you feel about if people were to form some intention focus groups to do active praying on the world's problems and trying to solve them by using intention and focus?
Oh, I love that question, Perry. Yeah, that's good. Give the man a cigar. Perry, I'm working on my next book, Crossing the Cusp, and I'm going to be focusing on that. I do believe that we have the power as a species to mitigate the severity of this event. It's not that we can prevent these things from happening, but I think we have the ability to mitigate it. And the way we do that is by coming together on a large basis, on a large scale, all across the globe. And what we do then is that we can, and it's a collaboration between science and spiritual, where we're facing certain threats. And scientists are saying, you know, if we could just change one little factor makes a huge difference. And I'll give you an example of that. When the Titanic sank, what everybody says it was iceberg that sank the Titanic. Well, I think it was a pair of binoculars. The Titanic sailed without enough binoculars, and the one binocular that was missing was in the crow's nest. If they had had that binocular instead of it sitting around some lieutenant's neck up on the, you know, up in the steering house, all right, is that they would have seen the berg much sooner. Now, it probably wouldn't have prevented the collision, but it would have meant the Titanic limping into New York with a damaged hull as opposed to a bunch of people dying a terrible death. Well, that to me is the whole point of mitigation. And I think that prayer collectively, people coming together, focusing the energy, but focusing it to a scientific purpose, that is something we can do as a species. And if we can do that, we can mitigate that. But in the same time, not only do we do the mitigation, we liberate ourselves, because that's when we really begin to get a sense of our co-creator power as sentient beings, and that is when we take a huge step forward. So this idea that you have, Perry, is a beautiful idea, and it is the right idea, and it's important, and the reason why it's important is here is what is at stake. We've been here before as a species, and if we blow it this time, like the pilots like to say, screw the pooch. If we do that this time, there's not going to be a next time. What's going to happen is that we're going to be a slave species after that for countless generations to come, and we're not going to be given our freedom again until our Earth has been so horribly raped and abused it's of no value to anyone. And we will be free for whatever is left of a desolate wasteland. And that is what we face if we let these elites and their insane ideas get away with this. On the other hand, we can, in this event, find the opportunity to do something really, really incredible. Now, you know, we published the Colburn Bible, and in there is a phenomenal account of the 10 plagues of Exodus, which is caused by Planet X Nibiru, or what others would call wormwood. Moses knew that that object was coming, and that that would create the same kind of insanities in Egypt that we're seeing now. Look at the world situation. It's crazy. And as an empire, we're crumbling. We're bleeding our middle class to death. We are, you know, using mercenaries, and we're borrowing money like there's no tomorrow to finance everything. Those are three things that empires do when they're failing. And that's the kind of insanity that Moses could take advantage of, and he got the Hebrews out of Israel. Well,
no, he got the Hebrews out of Egypt, not out of Israel.
Not out of Israel, too. Thanks for the correction. But he got everybody out of Egypt, all right? Took advantage of that situation. So you turn, like they say in sales, you got to turn your lemons into lemonade. And that's what Moses did, turned a lemon into lemonade. Used that opportunity of Planet X and the crisis it would create. And he knew that because he was an Egyptian, you know, he was in the Egyptian royal family. He had access to that information. And he just availed himself of a natural cataclysm to effect a very powerful result. And so let's take that same wisdom that Moses employed to get the Hebrews out of bondage in Egypt, and let's see if we can't make it work for us this time. I think we can. We guys out there like Perry, I know we can.
We have a flash message from Bob in Australia, and he says, Marshall, do you think this oil spill, and I would assume he's referring to the BP oil gusher in the Gulf, do you think that this is a big diversion to Planet X, or is it part of what's to come very soon?
I think it's part and parcel of what's coming. I mean, we're still trying to sort out the grassy knoll with, you know, the Kennedy assassination. I don't think we're going to get that much further with this. But when I look at it, there's harbinger signs. I mean, I have a lot of folks that I do this full time. This is what I do, you know, 7 days a week. And I have a tremendous amount of information flowing into me about what's happening in the Gulf. And it pains me deeply. I lived in Houston for 5 years, and I loved the Gulf. I loved the people. I loved the seafood. You know, it was. I have a lot of great memories there. And I have a lot of folks there I care for deeply. And first off, when I look at the BP spill, first thing I'm seeing is that on our article, we have an article at Yowza.com, YOWUSA.com, about the survey buoys in the Coral Sea. Two of them were saying, hey, the seabed's lifting in huge amounts. And what they did was they turned them off. They just said they quit working, you know. Really convenient, you know, when something's putting out information important like that, it tends to break. And but on the other hand, we just recently saw, again, we had not one but four survey buoys off the Aleutians that were sending tsunami alerts because the seabed rises, and we've recently had a pretty strong quake up there to go with that. So, in general, seabeds are rising. This is one of the things that when we were doing our research with the guides, I talked about earlier, this was a drumbeat message. Didn't matter which channel, which guide, which entity, whatever we were doing, they kept talking about the same thing. They said the worst of your problems are going to come from the oceans. And, you know, I mean, that's most of the planet right there anyway. And we're going to have seabeds rising. That is going to cause a whole host of problems. I think that the pressures that they're seeing there now could very well be that this is one of the things that are coming to it. It's more to me, in my mind right now, a convergence of just greed and carelessness and natural events that are coming, which just exacerbate those human failings. And what makes me sick is I was just learned today that the Obama administration gave BP drilling rights to run a deep well up, you know, up in the Arctic. Like, oh, great. These are the guys you want to give this to. But when overall you look at what's happening in the Gulf, let's be frank. All right. The telling clue of everything is the dispersant that they're using. And the dispersant that they're using is, it's not intended. This is really for shallow bays. Corrects it, and it is four times more toxic than the crude oil itself. And worse yet, by putting this on this dispersant on the oil, they prevent it from being easily skimmed up, which would be the best way to go. And they emulsify it so that it permeates throughout the entire water column. That means it's going to go down and kill the plankton. And in other words, the Obama administration has already written off the Gulf. It's going to be a wasteland. This is about saving the Atlantic. And that's why they're trying to emulsify everything so much. So if they could have contained this spill. There are proven technologies. They have genetically modified bacteria that go out and eat the oil. When they can't find any more oil, they die. Well, I mean, they've had this technology for decades now. It's been proven in Texas. It works. There's much better disbursements. I mean, just in general, there's a lot of other things that they could have done if this were going to be contained to the Gulf. But everything they're doing now just simply says we're writing off the Gulf, because we know if this doesn't wipe it out finally, something else will. So why invest the money and the effort there? But on the other hand, if you kill the Atlantic, that has ramifications for a lot of other folks, particularly like in Europe. I'm sure the Brits didn't want to see American oil washing up on their shores. So that's pretty much how I see it. My concern right now with the well is, and I can tell you the intelligence I'm getting on the well, is it amazes me time and time again. I know about things at least a week and many times 2 weeks in advance of what they're going to report on CNN. And so when CNN, for example, was saying that the relief wells were going to be drawing oil out, remember that story, and then all of a sudden, you know, they go, oh, no, they're injecting mud from the bottom up. Well, I knew that they were going to do a bottom-up mud injection 2 weeks before CNN ever got around to reporting it.
Well, you used to produce for CNN, right?
Yep.
But then, I don't want to hurt your feelings here. I don't want to hurt your feelings, but I'm going to tell you, if CNN says something, I divide it by 10, and then I may be down near a kernel of truth. I have watched on CNN, I have watched reporters say they were somewhere and report on events from that somewhere when I knew for sure they weren't even in that country.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it's the CNN of today is not the CNN I was with.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back after this. Wish you had called in. The phones are closed. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Marshall Masters this evening. And Marshall, I want to ask you a question. You mentioned something about the Colburn Bible a few minutes ago. And the Colburn is a collection of ancient texts that talk about lots of things related to Nibiru. Or Planet X, or whatever people want to call it. But let me ask you, if you can kind of sketch for us, what does the Colburn have to say about the times in which we're living right now?
Well, it actually gives very specific predictions. There's one part in there that gives very specific harbinger signs, and these harbinger signs were penned, the book is penned by the ancient Egyptians. It was after the Exodus, about the same time as first Moses was beginning to create the Torah, which turned into the Old Testament. And in that, what they were really doing is, it was their 9/11, if you will, report. They're trying to figure out how Moses and the God of the Jews was able to take out their pantheon of gods. But one of the things that they talked about, the destroyer, and they described the destroyer, that was their term for Planet X, Nibiru, Wormwood, whatever you want to call it. There's many names for this object. As a matter of fact, if you look on my site, yalza.com, I sent you a link. Even space.com is finally begrudgingly talking about the Nemesis Dark Star. And what they said is that the harbinger signs of its returns would be that a nation with the largest navy in the world would, like an apple rotten at the core, suddenly fail. Now, that actually very clearly described the fall of the Soviet Union. Now, people think that the American Navy is the biggest. Force-wise, you could say that. Now, but at the time, the Russians had a navy that was a third larger than ours. They just didn't, they had a different composition. They had missile cruisers and submarines, whereas we tend to go to the flat tops. So at the time that they fell, they had the largest navy in the world. Now, what they also predicted was the rise of radical Islam. What they said is that a new faith will come preaching peace, and it will bring war to the four corners of the earth. All right. That is, you know, Wahhabi Islam, period. So they nailed that from 3,600 years ago. And these are the type of things that really signaled it. Now, that one prophecy where it was about the fall of the Soviet Union, this is what prompted the secret society that had possession of this ancient text, and it's been kept in secret hiding because it's the kind of things that, like a lot of the many secret texts, the unpublished texts that were never added in by...
Don't you find it interesting, folks? Don't you find it interesting that right here, right now, when Marshall begins to talk about this, he gets cut off. I said it before in a previous broadcast. Remember this moment. All right, let's get him back on the line if we can.
Having their fun with us.
Yeah, I told the audience, isn't it interesting that right here, right now, when you start to talk about this, all of a sudden you get cut off. So, and as you've noticed, I've called you on a different phone line, using a different phone line. But anyway, okay, please proceed. And if they cut you off, we'll do a different phone line.
That's it. Pleasant persistence.
That's
how
it.
You deal with it. And so the harbinger signs were there, this secret society. There was one fellow in there that particularly went contrary to it, as we understand, and leaked out some copies. And we obtained one of those copies, actually, from a publisher in India who had gotten it from an antiquities dealer. But his... this particular publisher that we acquired it from, his wife was terrified of it because the last book in the Colburn Bible, the Britain book, talks very specifically about Jesus, has a lot of his actual dialogue, him speaking, by the autobiographer who obviously had met him in his time. And so, you know, for those that are going, you know, well, he never existed, he was a mythical character, well, now you have corroboration to the Bible. No, he's there, he existed. But on the other hand, the ancient Celts did not go for the Trinity, you know, the Trinity. They really viewed him as a great teacher, a philosopher, a very religious man. They loved him passionately, loved him deeply. His message really resonated with them. So, politically speaking, the Colburn was really a taboo until recently. And but it tells us about the accounts. Now, the thing about the Colburn Bible, and a great way for people, if they want to focus on the prophecy elements, is that we have a book by Greg Jenner called Planet X and the Colburn Bible Connection. And I like to call it my Is This My Cup of Tea book, because you can read it in a day and it connects all the dots. The Colburn Bible is really a Rosetta Stone, if you will, of 2012 and Planet X. And you can see how it connects the dots to so many other things, the Bible, and you could just, it's just amazing the number of connections. And you can read it in a day's time. It gives you all the relevant prophecy. And then that will really help give you an idea of whether you want to pursue the research or not. But the Colburn itself is, you know, when we originally got this thing, I was looking for some way to validate what Zachariah Sitchin was talking about. But then it took on a different dimension. When you read it, what I can tell you is that the only people who criticize it are the ones who've never read it. When you begin reading it, it just reaches to you in a profound way. It is, the ancients had an economy with words. They were laconic. In a few words, they could express ideas that we write entire books over, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so if somebody tells me, yeah, I read the Colburn over the weekend, yeah, that's great. You know,
They would have to be... They would have to be prodigious at reading to read it over the weekend.
That's really, you know, strung out. You know, I mean,
I have read it, but, and I am a speed reader, but I did not read it over the weekend.
Yeah, there you go. And, you know, for me, when I read it, I'll read a page or two pages, and then I have to put it down, and I spend 2 weeks thinking about it. And it's just that heavy. You know, so the thing, though, that comes out of it, even more than that, and they talk about, this is not the first time we've been seeded on this planet. Actually, this is the second time. The first time we were completely eradicated and we were reseeded. So Zachariah Sitchin is right. We're an engineered species. But the thing that reaches out to you from this ancient wisdom that the Egyptians and the Celts offer, and it's very different voices. The Egyptians are more kind of control freaky, whereas the Celts are, you know, it's not the way we, a lot of people tend to portray them as a bunch of guys wrapped in, you know, in skins and going out and beating on each other. They had a very, very spiritual view of things, and especially the relationship of men and women was better, in my opinion. I mean, and but when you're reading this and you're reaching back into the past, what you really realize was at the time of Exodus and following that, that while this knowledge, while wisdom was not widespread to the masses, not on the scale that it can be today thanks to the Internet, so it was the information, knowledge was too closely held by the elites and priests and scribes, the people that came across this stuff, but the ones that did have the knowledge, when you read what they're saying, that it stuns you because you begin to understand that they were actually, in some respects, more intellectually and spiritually advanced then than we are today. That the Dark Ages was really, really, really dark. We took 5 steps back, you know, and so we're still... You know, we've inched our way 4 steps forwards, but we're still 1 step back from where humanity was back during the time of the Exodus in some respects. And so it gives you a sense of connection over time, of endurance, that, you know, we're here to stay as a species.
Okay, now that brings up this question then. Mm-hmm. Does the Colburn speak about survival? Does it speak about, you know, that beyond these days, there are going to be people that survive these days of cataclysm?
There's one passage in the Colburn Bible that is literally stitched in my memory cells. The stout-hearted will not go down to destruction. That's it. The stout-hearted will not go down to destruction. And that's what we have to do. That's what they're sending this phenomenal work forward in time to us, is to give us that message. And we have to be strong. We have to be strong for each other. You know? And a good way to understand that is for people to go get their dictionary, and not one dictionary, but get a couple of different dictionaries, and look up the word meek. All right?
Mm-hmm.
But forget the modern interpretation. That's nonsense. You look at the ancient use, the root what did that word mean when it was first used? And then it had a completely different meaning. It was really referring to what the Colburn calls the stout-hearted. People who, you know, like that great line from The Grapes of Wrath, were the people that just to keep on a-coming. All right?
I've heard it described this way, and I think it's a good description, and that is the meek are people who really have the ability to stomp you into tomorrow, and they have the calmness of spirit to decide not to.
Yes. I mean, the meek are not weak. I mean, today they equate meek to weak, all right?
All right, we have to step away for a break, and we'll pick up with the meek when we come back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach. That means, of course, that we only have a few minutes left. We're talking with Marshall Masters. And Marshall, when we went away for break, we were talking about this phrase that is in our statement that is in the Colburn, that the stout-hearted shall not go down to destruction. We find similar statements in a lot of ancient texts and holy books. We were talking about the definition of meek as being the stout-hearted, people with the ability, if they wanted to stomp you into tomorrow, but the calmness of spirit to decide not to do so. And it's strength and calmness together. But let me ask this now, because there are a lot of people who are looking at 2012, and they're looking at it with a lot of fear and apprehension. And as you so eloquently point out in your video, they're at a fork in the road. They can take the path of least resistance, and they can say, nothing's going to happen, and if it does, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Or they can take the other path that's a little bit more challenging, and that's a path that leads to sort of reordering the way we think. For someone who is really concerned and really, really fearful now about 2012, what can they do that will get them started on the path towards surviving whatever's going to happen?
The most important thing is that you have to find the truth that resonates within you. And the only way a truth can resonate within you is when you, and you alone, put it there. And that means you have to make a commitment to becoming self-informed, to sorting this out on your own. You can follow the work that I'm doing, and that there's other excellent researchers out there as well. But you use this as a point of reference, not as an absolute, not as someone that you yield control of your life to. You don't yield your control of your life to anyone. You are the sovereign of your life. And so when you look at this information and you do that, you take it. You know, what causes the fear for people is the fear of the consequences, the fear that they're going to be mocked and ridiculed. And this happens. And I can tell you, I have seen awful things done. I have seen spouses, one spouse is studying this and the other one uses it as a pretext for infidelity. I've seen people lose jobs because they were talking about it in the lunchroom. There are real consequences. And I don't want anyone to suffer those consequences. I want to see, well, earlier we had that call in, Perry. Mm-hmm. Right, and when I hear people like Perry, it gives me as an author and a researcher, it gives me more hope. Because he's coming at it the right way. He's coming at it from a basis of love. There's only two emotions. Everything else is one shaded variant of one or the other, but those two emotions are fear and love. And when you are in a state of fear, you are yielding control. You are yielding your sovereignty to the elites. All right? And anyone that just simply is wanting to use you with about as much regard as we would have for a farm-raised catfish. All right? That's it. You're just a short-term asset at best. If you're in fear, then that's what it is. But if you are a sovereign, it's your life, you're going to just take care of it and you're going to quietly go about your business, then you're going to find a lot of peace in that. And is that going to make sure, is that going to give you a guarantee that you're going to survive it? No. But it does significantly enhance your chances. You got to get your mind out of thinking in terms of absolutes. Everything in this is relative.
All right, but before we run out of time here, because this goes right along with what you're saying, let me read this flash message from Davey in the United Kingdom, all right?
Mm-hmm.
He says, "Hello, Kevin and Marshall. I share many of the sentiments discussed. Does fear seep in because we mainly draw and seek our security by means of the past, projecting into the future only to negate the present? Perhaps strength and change and the dissipation of fear only comes about via the acceptance of what is now and not via the past or our projection into the future."
Davey's absolutely right. You have to be in the present. You know, what I tell folks is that you really have to think in terms of your five zones of control. And your five zones of control are your body, your encampment, the outer perimeter, long-distance surveillance, and electronic. All right, those are your five zones of control. Anything that's outside of your five zones of control, you don't have control, but you have to understand where it impinges, and then you adapt for that. So if you get caught up in things, and you're going, oh my gosh, what about I'm losing this, or I'm going to lose that, or am I going to get this later on, or whatever, if you're focusing on those things, you're not in the present. And the problem with that is when you're not in the present, whatever's going to kill you is. So you have to be in the present. You have to be in the moment, or in the now, as a lot of people like to say. And if you do that, you're on. So Davey's right. Made a good point.
All right, we're just about three minutes or so from the end of the show. Marshall, I want to say again for the audience, if they click your picture on my website, it will take them to your website, and it's well worth the journey, folks. Click his picture, take a look at the website. Also, directly under Marshall's picture on my website, there is a link, and that link will take you to his latest video. And you really ought to watch it. It is very informative, makes a lot of sense, and I think you'll enjoy it. I think you will experience some growth as a result of having watched it. Marshall, as we head towards the end here of this show, what is the most important message that you think people need to hear from Marshall Masters?
You're not alone. 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 There's a lot of you out there. And you're being segmented so you don't realize how big your numbers are and how fast they're growing. But I see it. And it gives me hope. And I will tell you, in this research, I've spent a lot of years wondering if we were just going to buy the farm. And I have hope, and it's because of what I see. And so you're not alone. We have the Planet X Town Hall. It's a community of people that are, these are folks that a lot of them come to the community when they're in stage three. But our moderators are wonderful, sweet people. Many of them are advanced in years. They do this as a labor of love. Everyone is involved. it amazes me sometimes. I get emails and they say, I have to have a surgery next month. I'll be a little light for a couple of weeks. I hope you're not angry. It's like, my God, I love you for what you're doing. Don't worry. Just get it done. You come back when you're ready. But, you know, that's all. That's the most important thing. You're not alone.
And I think that's an important message that that everybody needs. Because, you know, for what, you know, I talk a lot about freedom here on the show. And freedom, the wrong kind of freedom, taken down the wrong path, the wrong concept of freedom, turns into isolation. And it doesn't need to be. And it should not be. Freedom is not isolation. Certainly, if you're isolated, you may be free to do whatever you want to do, but then what do you really want to do when you're all by yourself forever? There's not really a whole lot you want to do. So freedom is not isolation. Freedom is being who you are within the context of everyone else being who they are. And just be cool with who you are and be cool with whoever, whatever everybody else is. Marshall, thanks for being with us. Stay on the line with me for just a moment. That's it, folks. That's a wrap. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. And you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.